past the Vazool, baby.
Come on in.
Welcome to Scream Until You Like It's Amityville Retrospective. I am one of your hosts, Ryan, and with me as always is Nicole.
Hello.
How you doing, Nicole?
Good. How are you?
Great. Always great. So the movie we're going to be covering tonight is the fifth film in the Amityville franchise and the first one that decided to say, fuck it, we don't need the house to make a movie. So, The Amityville Curse came out in 1990. This is actually a Canadian production. I did not know that until this rewatch, so I apologize to everybody for that. But the basic story is that, oh good, this is another IMDb synopsis. It's just fucking awful. Five people spend the night in an abandoned house, an Amityville haunted house. Not the Amityville haunted house, an Amityville haunted house, and soon find themselves terrorized by assorted ghosts, venomous insects, and ghostly apparitions. I feel that assorted ghosts, you don't need to say and ghostly apparitions as well. Like they kind of come they're hand in hand.
Synonymous. Yeah.
So, but they had to fill. I mean, it's hard to get a full sentence synopsis out of this movie, so they had to use some filler, I guess. Anyway, here is the trailer for The Amityville Curse.
A legendary town, a mansion shrouded in mystery.
The family who lived here, we never did explain why they moved out.
And tonight, its occupants...
To the house!
To the house!
...are in for a rude awakening.
Who's that?
I heard a voice. I think there's something else in the house.
As a furious force is unleashed in all its terror.
He's here. I can feel him.
Forgive me. Forgive me, please.
It brought us here, Marvin.
What is it?
The house. Something about the house.
It began as a best-selling book.
No! Somebody!
That exploded into movie history by shocking audiences around the world. Now, one of the greatest horror sagas of all returns. The Amityville Curse, rated R, on video cassette from Vidmark Entertainment.
So, The Amityville Curse, as I mentioned, came out in 1990, directed by Tom Barry, had multiple writers, which I didn't look into that. Usually when there's multiple writers, that means there was problems from day one. But we do have at least one name I recognized. We have Kim Coates in this as Frank. Mm-hmm. Did you recognize anybody else in this movie?
Nobody else, no. Just him.
They kind of look like other people. Like Donna Whiteman, who plays Debbie, our heroine. I thought it was, what's her name, that we were talking about a few episodes back when I brought up that Time After Time movie with Malcolm McDowell. Mm-hmm. The horny mom from What's Eating Gilbert Grape.
Mary Steenburgen.
Yeah, I thought that was Mary Steenburgen. Until I looked it up, I'm like, okay, it is not her. Same with her husband there, the psychiatrist, the really smug dude.
Marvin, yeah.
Marvin. He looked familiar too, but no, I have no clue who he is.
His voice was very familiar too.
Yeah, maybe, I don't know.
That's what I heard
look
first.
Into it. Maybe he's done some voice acting. This movie is not exactly... Well, that's not good. His IMDb credit shows just a picture, not just... his picture, but a still from this movie. So I'm guessing he has not been in a lot.
Hasn't done a lot more, no.
Okay, so he is known for playing the role of Hoodlum in the 1985 Harrison Ford film Witness.
Okay.
And he also played Village Student in the Barbra Streisand movie Yentl.
I have never seen Yentl, so I don't recognize him from that.
No, I don't know who this guy is.
I don't either.
But anyway, I'm getting ahead of myself. Before we start talking about this movie, we just like to actually, you know, maybe talk about something else we've seen, something we might have enjoyed. Because surprise, everybody, we didn't like this one. But we'll save that till later. Nicole, what you been watching?
I've been on a cheesy sci-fi kick lately. I love them regardless, but I've watched like four of them this week. The Sharknado movies, which I adore. And I watched Lavalantula, which is one of my favorites, not just cheesy sci-fi, but one of my favorites altogether. I love it. Steve Guttenberg, Marion Ramsey, basically the cast of Police Academy, with erupting volcanoes in Los Angeles that are spouting out tarantulas that can shoot fireballs. Like it's ridiculous. And I love it. It's so much fun. So much fun.
It's ridiculous done right too. I absolutely love Lavalantula. Exactly. I loved its sequel. And actually the nod to the Sharknado franchise as well. Have you seen Lavalantula too?
I have not. No.
So in Lavalantula 2, Steve Guttenberg's running around and he bumps into the dude from Sharknado.
That happens in the first one.
Oh, sorry. So it is the first one.
Yeah,
okay.
That was the original. He runs into Ian Ziering. Yeah.
Yeah, that's it.
I got a shark problem right now.
How there has not been a crossover movie, I don't know. Steve Guttenberg's acting the hell out of that movie too.
He did, man. He really went full force in that. He was great. And I got to say, he must have been working out because
right.
He bulked up for that. He was fit.
Fucking jacked. I remember when I first saw him, like, oh, Steve Guttenberg's put on a bit. But then he's in a muscle shirt later in the movie. I'm like, oh, no, the dude got built.
Yeah, his white T-shirt was like all ripped and it was like, damn.
Good for him.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, Lavalantula, fantastic. I actually prefer them over the Sharknado movies. One movie I can talk about that comes to mind is Murder Size.
Oh, geez. You?
Now, I watched this actually with Mike and Clint.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't remember. Were you there too? I was half asleep when
I was not. I chose to pass on that one. Okay. I did see about 5 minutes of it. Months ago, when I was over at Clint's, and I wanted to pass on that one because I don't think I would have made it through just with the 5 minutes I saw. I couldn't put myself through that.
I know I like to sprinkle clips of the movies we've been watching into, this and, Murder Size gonna be a little tricky. There's a lot of nudity in that one.
Yeah.
Holy fuck. I don't even know what the plot was. Like, it just every 10 seconds there was a boob.
Naked women jumping around and people getting killed. That's pretty much it.
Everybody was in leotards. Someone got really upset about something and started killing everybody.
Mm-hmm. Very 80s.
Yeah. But I know it was an independent feature. And for an independent feature, it really does quite well. Like, it really feels like if you had told me this was a trauma flick from the mid 80s, I'd have believed you 100%.
Yeah.
So we might as well move on to the main attraction, which is, as I mentioned, Amityville Curse from 1990. Nicole, you want to say something about this?
If I can find something to say about this, I will say... the acting actually was pretty good for the most part. Because Kim Coates was in it, and I'm a huge Sons of Anarchy fan, so I'll watch anything with him in it. He did good. And the lead girl, Debbie, did really good. So I was really quite pleasantly surprised at the level of acting in this movie. Family, I'm assuming they're a family. I didn't really understand. I know that everybody invested in the house together, but I don't know how that related to
so how that works. Nobody, I don't think it matters, but I did actually figure it out this time. So Debbie and Marvin, the psychiatrist, right?
Right.
Their husband and wife, or boyfriend and girlfriend, there's something.
Right.
Frank and Abigail are another couple.
Yes.
But they're just friends of, I believe it's Debbie and Marvin that have bought the house.
Right.
And they're going to flip it. So right. They get their friends. Yeah. They get their friends, Frank and Abigail. And what the hell's the other guy's name? Ben?
I think so.
I don't know. I didn't even. That's how much of an impression Ben leaves on us.
He was fixing the kitchen floor. That's what I remember. That's the one scene with him I remember.
Almost killed Marvin with a nail gun.
That's
that's all I can recall from Ben. And we still don't know if that's his name. I'm trying to look it up right now. Sorry, Bill. Bill is his name.
Bill, you were close.
Yeah. Started with a B. But yeah, Bill is Bill. Good old Bill. Good old almost kill your best friend with a nail gun, Bill.
Yeah, kind of a cardboard cutout character.
How did Bill die? I missed that.
We don't know. He was just dead in the chair.
Okay, good. I thought I missed something. Okay.
No, with his headphones on and his tongue was sticking out. And that's what cracked me up the most. Yeah.
Debbie is really bad at telling when people are dead.
Yeah, she is. Yeah.
It took her forever to figure out.
Shaking him and he's not moving.
Like, at what point, just figure it out, Debbie. Read the room, okay?
Yeah. Read the room.
And we're jumping right to the ending here. So, like you mentioned, like we were talking about, these people, like, it's a standard house flipping ghosty story. But the priest, the movie starts with a priest, and he's killed by an unknown assailant. And who is it that finds him? It's Mrs.
Mortimer?
Moriarty.
Moriarty. Okay.
That's right. Mrs. Moriarty finds him after killing like the biggest fucking rat in the world. Just holding it up like a trophy.
I couldn't believe it. Is her standing there with a mousetrap this big and a rat this big hanging from it.
And there's the poor priest. Like, you can tell in his face, he's just like, oh, fuck, it's the shit again.
Why does she bother me with this?
But they, for some reason, take the confessional to the priest's house.
I don't understand that at all.
Get rid of that shit. There's got to be blood and all kinds of goopy stuff all over that.
Yeah. Like, that's a crime scene. Like, why is it being transported in a pickup truck to the basement of this, you know, unsold priest's house?
Yeah. And I mean, it's not the priest's confessional. It's not like, that's the church's confessional. So why is it going to the priest?
Right. Why don't they just clean it up and leave it? Like,
or just burn it or something.
Something.
Say a prayer and get rid of it. Jesus Christ.
No, let's put it in the basement.
Like, four people are dead because you couldn't be bothered to get rid of something properly.
Exactly.
So that's what sets this all up. We've got this haunted confessional in the basement of this other Amityville house. Like, the movie takes place in Amityville, but it's not an Amityville movie. I don't get it.
I don't either.
Why? Like, I get why they do that now. Like, the whole thing is, like I mentioned in another episode, you can't copyright the name of a town.
Right.
But this one was still trying. Like, they mentioned the DeFeo murders in this.
Yeah, they did.
Debbie's got this weird thing, though, where she has to write down her dreams because she has, like, really, really, like, vivid nightmares that are almost full-blown night terrors. Bill, being a psychiatrist or psychologist or psychotherapist, whatever he is.
Marvin.
Marvin. Trying to give Bill more credit than what he's worth. Fucking Bill. Marvin is her husband. Marvin. And he's the yada, yada, yada guy.
Yeah.
That scene where she's like writing down like what she's writing, like, I'm sorry or something. And then 111 over and over.
Yeah.
And all I can see, the only thing I'm focusing on in that scene is there's Marvin in his robe holding like a glass of scotch or something. And I'm like, you're getting off on this, aren't you, Marvin? Yeah. The fact that this woman is clearly in need of some help and is actively having an episode right now while you're standing there in your robe. Like this is it for you. This is like your foot thing, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. Like he's like his career is more important than his wife's well-being, you know?
Yeah.
He needs to observe her.
Yeah. She's one of his case studies.
Yeah.
And that is giving this movie way too much credit because
it is.
They don't even attempt to focus on anything. This is almost a clip show of a movie, which
it is.
Like, it's just, I've never seen a movie of a more perfect example of, and then this happened, and then this happened, and then this happened, and then this happened. Yeah. There is, it's just scene to scene to scene to scene. Nothing, any attempt at building any character development is immediately squandered by some lukewarm attempt at a jump scare. Although that the priest's face coming out of the confessional booth was pretty cool. I like that. When she's having the nightmare in the basement and the, you know, you're getting, it's almost like Freddy on the wall in the original Nightmare on Elm Street. That was okay. I can't think of a single other scare that got me. The amount that Kim Coates smokes in this movie is concerning.
He's up to about 3 packs a day. And they even mention it in the movie. She's like, that's your third cigarette this hour or something like that. Like they even mentioned like, okay, he's chain smoking in this house since they've been in this house.
Well, yeah. And it's supposed to be, and this actually goes into the other thing I wanted to talk about. So it's clear that from the get go, Kim Coates is like, Frank is, something's off with Frank. He was good. The more he stays in the house though, he's getting more and more nervous, anxious. I always took it, so spoiler alert, the priest had an illegitimate son, and the son killed the priest, but the plot synopsis I read said that the son was possessed, and that Frank was possessed by the ghost of the son, but I took it that Frank was the son.
That's how I took it. That's what I wrote down.
There's no way. We both did not miss that. But there is no possession. Frank is not possessed. Frank is the son. He is the illegitimate son. And that's why being in that house is making him anxious.
The only thing I can even think of is the scene when he has like an episode and she goes out for a drink and he's in the bathtub and he's like, cold baths. Cold baths are the only thing that...
Yeah.
Makes it go away. I remember that from when I was a kid.
Nice cold, okay. Nice cold bath. It's the only thing that used to get rid of them. I remember that as a kid. That's the only thing that I absolutely remember.
Yeah.
So obviously he's got something going on before he came into this house. Like something wrong with him, you know.
And that's what I took it as, is that he had repressed these memories, but being in the house again had like brought him back out. That scene too, I think he's in the, there's a scene with him in the bath with Abigail, right? And he's smoking in the tub.
Yes.
That is the most disgusting thing in the world. That is the most disgusting fucking thing in the world. Dampness and cigarettes is like, creates the most foul odor.
It does. It does. Exists. It's like smoking on a really humid day. It's just, it just sticks, you know?
And she's all like all over him. I'm thinking that dude, I guarantee you, smells like a fucking ashtray right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the true villain of this movie. Secondhand smoke.
Yeah.
but yeah, sorry. I went off on a tangent there. Because this is like, we're back basically to the end of this movie now, where Frank's gone war wacky. He's already killed Mrs. Montiori. Moriarty.
Moriarty.
But thankfully, you know, she dropped that 50-pound video camera that was able to record her death.
her character, I didn't understand her character at all. She just walks into this house. Like, is she the welcome wagon or what? Because she
she was at the beginning of the movie. She was the priest's helper.
Right. Oh, that's right. Okay.
Yeah. So, which, by the way, again, I've seen this movie several times. This was the first time I picked up on that.
Okay. See, I didn't even get it. I must have nodded off at them.
And this was the priest's old house. So I don't know if she just kind of kept coming back to it.
But like you walk into this house that is now owned by new people and you take out your glass eye and, you know, welcome to the neighborhood. And then you assault this girl in the bathroom of the bar.
Mrs. Moriarty was fucking nuts. That at all.
She was nuts. She's like the equivalent of Crazy Ralph from Friday the 13th.
Not once, though, does she say that the house has a death curse.
It's got a death curse.
No, she doesn't.
But what was up with the glass eye, too? Like, Mrs. Moriarty, like 50% of the time, I'm like, I want to, this woman seems like a blast. I want to have a beer with her. And the other 50% of the time is I'm like, I think if I ever accidentally closed my eyes around this woman, they wouldn't open up again.
Exactly. Like she's sacrificing live chickens in her basement or something.
We're 23 minutes in. We've been talking about this movie. See, this is what it's going to be like for a lot of the later movies too. Like there is not a good chunk of change in this movie. We have basically, like we mentioned, Frank finally goes off the deep end, kills Marvin in the confessional, and kills Bill. He just died.
And then there was the random dog with the kid that kept disappearing, who supposedly hung himself. I didn't understand anything that was going on in this movie.
Right.
They just threw in random things that they thought were creepy, and it made no sense to the story at all.
Yeah, like the kid hanging on the... that was actually some big controversy, too, by the way. When this movie originally came out, the cover art, like this was direct to VHS, the cover art showed the hanging kid, and everybody lost their shit. That movie had to be pulled. They had to change the cover.
Oh my God.
And that's why we have the more common cover now, which is the priest's face pushing against the confessional. But yeah, no, that cover caused a lot of problems. And yeah, the dog too. So the dog was real.
I'm assuming the dog was real since it bit Frank. I mean, it attacked him through the door. I don't know what's real in this movie. I don't think any of it's real. I think...
But yeah. We're not sure about the dog, the kid obviously hanging, because that was the they had mentioned as a useless, it literally goes nowhere. They mentioned that they found who killed the priest, but he killed himself before they could take him to trial. Which I guess is supposed to suggest that Frank killed this guy as well. Or not Frank, because apparently Frank's possessed by the ghost of the illegitimate son, who I guess died, but we don't know that he died because but the kid wasn't, was the kid the illegitimate son? I thought the kid was.
It's all coming together now.
Oh, yeah. There we go. It's got layers.
Now that we're talking about it, it's an onion. It's the onion of Amityville world.
So Frank was possessed.
Frank was possessed by the kid who hung himself.
Which means
that
all this
hung himself was the one who killed the priest because he was his illegitimate son.
Now I just feel really bad for Frank. Yeah. Frank just wanted to smoke his cigarettes in the bathtub.
Exactly.
Got his face melted and
face melted off and hit with the nail gun and stabbed and
with this giant cross.
Trying to strangle his wife.
Tried to strangle poor Abigail.
Poor Abigail
was clearly just into freaky stuff
and wanted to be...
She's like, I need a night away from this. Comes back, tries to get this.
Comes back and she gets strangled. Yeah.
And Debbie having these dreams leads to nothing.
No.
It does not help her figure out that Frank's going to try to murder everybody.
All it does is set up the flashback to when the priest was killed.
Yep. And I guess, thankfully it gave us that hanging scene that we just figured out now.
Exactly. Now we know how that ties into the story. This is what it is. They tell you, like the story comes together, but you don't understand it because you're so bored. You're not even paying attention to it. They don't point out any major plot twists, or, you know, the subject matter is just, everything's just monotone. It's a very monotone movie. You know, it's just the equivalent of watching paint dry. Trying to pay attention to this.
There's that scene where Marvin is talking to those dudes in the bar about being a psychologist or whatever the hell he is. Yeah. And you can tell they're just fucking tired of his bullshit.
Yeah.
That is a perfect analogy for this movie.
Yes.
We are the people at the bar, and the movie is Marvin.
And this movie is Marvin.
But you're absolutely right. Like, this movie does have, as we figured out, some decent twists.
Yeah.
We don't give a shit because we're so fucking bored. I could have sworn this movie was over 2 hours long. It is an hour and 33 fucking minutes.
It seems like every Amityville movie is like that. Every one that we've watched so far. I just sit there like, is it over yet? Is it over yet? Thinking 3 hours have gone by and it's been, you know, 40 minutes. Like it, yeah.
After this, we get to what I call the 90s trilogy of Amityville. We're going to get Amityville, It's About Time, Amityville, The Next Generation, and Amityville Dollhouse.
Mm-hmm.
Those movies are not boring.
Good.
I wish the friend, like, these next three movies, I can't wait to talk about them. These next three movies are the reason why I wanted to do all this.
Okay, so cool.
I'm very excited for these ones, even though I do realize in hindsight one of them is a little flowers in the attic-y, but
okay.
It's ick, but not like
part two,
not ick. Amityville 2 ick.
Okay.
No blood relation. We'll say that.
Okay.
But anyway, yeah. So, but this one, unfortunately, and I knew when I was mentioning it to you that this was not going to be a good one. It's an interesting one. It's the first one that tries to get away from the house. It's the first one that tries to have nothing to do with the Lutzes or the house or anything like some other movies like Amityville 4 with the, you know, the parts of the house coming out to be possessed as, or be haunted as well. This just tried to be its own things that happened to be set in Amityville.
Right.
And I can see the point of doing it. Like, we can't just always keep doing movies about this one house. Maybe we can just make the town of Amityville haunted and we can do, you know, this and that. I get what they're trying to do. The movie just fucking sucks though. It's boring as all hell. And that's the biggest offense. Like, I've said time and time again, I will gladly sit and watch a bad movie and have the time of my life. You put a boring movie in front of me, and I don't care if it's a good boring movie or a bad boring. I haven't gotten through The Godfather because I find it boring.
Right.
This movie is fucking boring.
It is horribly boring. And I'm with you. I would rather watch a bad, entertaining movie than watch an Oscar-winning movie where I'm yawning. You know, it's... Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I've come to be entertained. Entertain me.
Exactly. I paid my money for entertainment. Yeah. Entertain me.
So having gone through that, I'm sure we're about ready to get into the ratings space for this. Oh, so you want to go first? You want me to go first?
I'll go first because I actually think mine is a little higher than yours.
Okay. So I know you have an interesting rating system. Just give us a quick rundown of that before you.
Yes.
Give us a number.
I have 6 points I rated on. Each point is from 1 to 10. I rate on acting, cast, story, effects, opening, and ending. And then I just average it out, and that's how I get my rating. So this one, Amityville 5 Curse, I have given it 3.0. And one of the only reasons I even gave it, because I did give it higher than 3, than part 3, because part 3 I think I did 1.5. The only reason I gave it for that was the acting. The acting actually was not everybody, but it actually was pretty good. It was pretty convincing. And Kim Coates is one of those actors, no matter how bad the movie is, I'm still going to watch it just because he's in it.
That's fair. I am not going to rate this a 3 out of 10. I find it to be incredibly boring. I don't know how I've managed to watch this several times, but as you know me, like, I am a glutton for punishment. I like to marathon movie franchises, and this has been part of a marathon session for me multiple times. So that is usually how I wind up watching it. I agree. The acting is solid. I like one special effect. The rest of the movie is, there's nothing redeemable about it. The music is, when it's there, it's, I can't remember a single piece of the music from this movie.
I can't either. I didn't even know there was music.
Yeah, exactly. Like I said, the story is incredibly boring. There's just no reason to watch this. Kim Coates was wasted. This gets a 1.5 out of 10 for me. I think that's actually lower than I gave Amityville 2. Because despite the fact that Amityville 2 makes me sick to my stomach, at least Amityville 2 makes me feel something.
Yes, exactly. Like I said, with Bill's character, this is the cardboard cutout of the Amityville franchise so far. Yeah.
No. This, I'm sure there will be lower points than this moving forward, and retroactively, this one might go up for me. Yeah. But in the meantime, though, this right now is probably my least favorite of the, at least it is my least favorite of the main franchise.
Right.
But that about wraps it up for this episode. Nicole, you want to do some plugging?
I would. Again, scream until you like it. I don't have my shirt on. It was in the laundry. I didn't get it out of the dryer in time, which is why you got Batman. But yeah, scream until you like it. Like, subscribe, get on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, all of them. YouTube, we're out there. We've got some really great stuff.
I second that. Nicole, Mike, Clint, and Victoria, all y'all's just a great bunch of people. The Facebook group is fucking phenomenal. Always funny stuff coming out of there. Always good times. And Mike is really, really big on those rules for the Facebook group. Every five times I want to post, I get dinged with, hey, remember what the rules are for this. I actually really like that because I've seen a lot of other Facebook groups that just go off the deep end.
Yeah.
And I got to give credit. That Scream Until You Like It Facebook page is run incredibly well.
It is. It is. And Mike and Victoria do an amazing job.
And they also let, again, as I said before, they let me shoot the shit about Amityville movies. So
yeah.
Well, Mike and Clint do, I think. I don't know. I don't know who does the YouTube part of it.
I believe that's Mike. Yeah.
Okay. So yeah. Kudos. Thanks, Mike. Love you, buddy.
Yeah.
But yeah, as always, I am going to pimp out the other half of what I do, which is the Hormonal Werewolves. We've got a Facebook group, and we have a weekly YouTube show where we like to talk about movies good and bad, new and old, everything in between, sometimes whatever the fuck we want. Now that I actually got a mic that works better, you might actually be able to hear me better on that. And yeah, we're having a good time with that so far. So yeah, that about wraps it up for our plugs. So as always, I've been Ryan.
And I have been Nicole.
And remember to
smile, you son of a bitch!